Savancy. As it happened, the first person on the scene was a retired gendarme who lived in a nearby village. The next to arrive were the Crown Prince himself and his usual retinue of bodyguards. They surrounded the two vehicles of the princess's motorcade, along with a third vehicle that had been abandoned by the kidnappers. To subsequent passers-by, it looked like a serious traffic accident involving wealthy men from the Middle East. "Hardly an unusual occurrence in France," said Rousseau. "The retired gendarme was sworn to secrecy," he continued, "as were the officers who took part in a rapid nationwide search for the princess. Rousseau offered the assistance of the Alpha Group, but was informed by his chief and his minister that his services were not required."
"Why not?"
"Because His Royal Highness told my minister that his daughter's abduction," Rousseau shrugged. "It's hard to say. The Crown Prince told almost no one, and security at the school was very tight. It was handled by a man named Lucien Villard. He's French, not Swiss. He used to work for the Service de la Protection."
"Why was a veteran of an elite unit like the SDLP running security at a private school in Geneva?"
"Villard didn't leave the service on the best of terms. There were rumors he was having an affair with the president's wife. When the president found out about it, he had him fired. Apparently, Villard took the girl's abduction quite hard. He resigned his post a few days later."
"Where is he now?"
"Still in Geneva, I suppose. I can get you an address if you—"
"Don't bother."
Gabriel contemplated the three photographs arrayed on the table.
"What are you thinking?" asked Rousseau.
"I'm wondering how many operatives it took to pull off something like this."
"And?"
8 to 10 for the kidnapping itself, not to mention the support agents. And yet somehow—" Gabriel tapped pause.
"Quite a coincidence, don't you think?"
"Keep watching."
Gabriel pressed play and watched the two people at Brasserie Saint-Maurice complete their phone calls. The woman first, the man 27 seconds later, at 16:11:34. He left the café at 16:13:22 and climbed into the Citroën estate car. The woman departed 3 minutes later on foot.
"You can pose it now."
Gabriel did.
"We were never able to determine with certainty that the two people at Brasserie Saint-Maurice were conducting a cellular call or internet-based conversation at 4:11 on the Friday afternoon in question. If I had to guess, the phones were a ruse. They were talking directly to one another in the café. Simple but effective."
"Where did she go next?"
Rousseau dealt another photo across the tabletop. "A professionally dressed woman climbing into the passenger seat of a Ford Transit, light gray. The woman's gloved hand was on the door latch to every weekend to spend time with his daughter.
Because His Royal Highness is a one-man economic stimulus program. And because, like it or not, he's going to be the ruler of Saudi Arabia for a long time."
Quietly, Rousseau added, "If you can find his daughter."
Gabriel made no reply.
The room filled with smoke as Rousseau considered his options. "For the record," he said finally, "the government of France will not tolerate your involvement in the search for Prince Khalid's daughter. That said, your participation might prove useful to the Alpha Group, provided, of course, we establish certain ground rules."
"Such as?"
"You will share information with me as I have shared it with you."
"Agreed."
"You will not bug, blackmail, or brutalize any citizen of the Republic."
"Unless he deserves it."
"And you will undertake no attempt to rescue Princess Rima on French soil. If you discover her whereabouts, you will seat and summon Sarah with a nod."
They left Annecy by way of the Avenue de Caen, passing the spot where the woman had entered the transit van, and made their way to the D14. It bore them westward through a string of alpine towns and villages that lay along the banks of the Fier River. Beyond the hamlet of La Croix, the road climbed sharply into a coppice of trees before emerging once more into a Van Gogh landscape of groomed farmland. At the intersection of the D38, Gabriel eased onto the grassy verge and switched off the engine. The silence was complete. A single villa occupied a hilltop about a kilometer away. Otherwise, there was not a building or residence in sight. Gabriel opened his door and placed a foot on the ground. Instantly, he felt shattered auto glass beneath his shoe. It was everywhere, the glass, at all four corners of the imperfect intersection. The French police, in their haste, hadn't given the scene a proper cleaning. There was even a bit of blood still on the asphalt, like an oil stain, and a long set of tire marks. The monstrosity of iron bars and gold-dipped lamps, behind which a perfect gravel drive stretched toward a garish private Versailles. Gabriel pondered it in silence. Finally, he asked, "Why am I trying to help a man who would waste 400 million euros on a house like that?" "What's the answer?" Before Gabriel could respond, his BlackBerry shivered. He frowned at the screen. "What is it?" asked Sarah. Rafik Al-Madani just entered the Interior Ministry in Paris. 18. Geneva. During his brief stay in the office station in Paris, Gabriel had done more than place Rafik Al-Madani under surveillance. He had also ordered Unit 8200 to find the address of Lucien Villard, the former chief of security at the International School of Geneva. The cyber thieves of the unit obtained it in a matter of minutes from the personnel section of the school's computer network, which they entered as... It was an odd place to leave it. Unless, thought Gabriel, he had no intention of taking it with him when he departed. But why was the man in the tan overcoat sitting in a cafe next to the former director of security at the International School of Geneva? Villar's compromised phone lay on the tabletop before him. Unit 8200 had routed the feed securely to Gabriel's BlackBerry. The audio quality was crystalline. Gabriel could hear the clinking of cutlery and glass in the cafe and the chatter of pedestrians as they passed along the pavement, but there was a transmission delay of several seconds. It was like watching an old movie where sound and picture were not in sync. The two central characters in this film had yet to speak. It was possible, thought Gabriel, they never would. Just then there was a knock at his window, two firm raps of a policeman's knuckle, followed by a curt wave of a gloved hand. Gabriel raised his own hand in a gesture of apology and eased away from the curb into the swiftly flowing evening traffic. He met his where Gabriel boarded an 8:15 Eurostar bound for London. His seat was in business class. Surrounded by merchants and financiers, he read the morning papers. They were filled with misleading accounts of the mysterious bombing in Geneva involving the former head of security from an elite private school for the children of diplomats. As the train approached the Channel Tunnel, Gabriel dispatched an encrypted text message informing the recipient of his imminent arrival in the British capital. The reply was a long time in coming and inhospitable in tone. It contained no greeting or salutation, only an address. Gabriel assumed it was the address of a safe house. Or perhaps not. The British didn't have any safe houses, he thought. At least none Moscow Center didn't know about. It was 9:30 when the train drew into London's St. Pancras International. Gabriel expected to be met on arrival, but as he crossed the gleaming ticket hall, he saw no evidence of a British reception committee. He should have immediately called London Station and requested a driver and escort. Houses, and not just in London, worldwide. But I wasn't the one who betrayed them to the Russians. Rebecca Manning did that. A moment passed, then Whitcomb said, "We go back a long way, Mr. Mudd. If you call me that again, all the way back to the Kharkov operation. And you know I have nothing but the utmost respect for you. But it would have been better if you'd let her defect." "Nothing would have changed, Nigel. There still would have been a scandal, and you still would have been forced to dump all your safe houses. It's not just the safe properties, it's everything. Our networks, our station heads, our ciphers and encryption. For all intents and purposes, we are no longer in the business of espionage." "That's what happens when the Russians plant a mole at the highest level of an intelligence service." "But at least you get new safe houses," said Gabriel. "This is much better than that dump in Stockwell." "That's gone too. We're selling and acquiring properties so quickly we've actually had an impact on the London real estate market.